Hey, Hi Drag listeners, Random here. Episode number 95 and 96 presented an interesting challenge for us. Normally, we record on Mumble. Up until episode 95, that is. From 95 on, we decided to switch over to Discord. And for those people who know me, they know that I am not a fan of Discord. At all. Period. If you work for Discord, I'm sorry. Needless to say, when we recorded these two episodes, episode number 95, as soon as we finished recording, the file disappeared. Then we recorded episode 96 as a replacement to episode number 95, and none of us can download it. Through some creative shenaniganry, we were able to retrieve both files, and we present to you episode number 95, April Foolishness. A little bit late. Sorry.
Flight controllers, listen up. Give me a go, no go for launch. Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
Grab your bourbon. Guidance. This go. Is High Drag.
I am Kyle Yanowski.
I am Randa McNally.
I am Ashtarothy.
I'm Finter.
Zayo Amadeus.
I am Selen.
We are Go.
Network.
Go.
Recovery.
Go.
Capcom.
We're Go Fly.
Launch Control, this is Houston. We are Go for launch.
This is High Drag.
Hello, and welcome to episode 95 of the High Drag Podcast. Today, we have Ashtarothy joining us.
Every time. It's all right, man. I choke there, too.
Ash, would you like to introduce yourself?
Greetings, fellow Empyreans. I am Ashtarothy, member of Malrovian Industries and podcaster extraordinaire. I don't know. It sounded like there needed to be something else at the end of that.
Good deal. Opus?
I'm Opus Magnum. I fly with Sub-Zero Corporation in the Imperium. Goonswarm Federation is the alliance. I also am the CEO of Eve Onion.
Welcome to the show. And Random.
Hi there, I'm Random McNally. I am a line member in Stay Frosty in a Band Apart. We are participants in the Stream Fleet Tournament, and we are all but pawns in the Ashtarothy Podcasting Network.
And I am Dehan Minyuk. Random, how did it feel to be introduced last on the guest host there?
Not too bad. I don't mind that. And you know, there are some times when I kind of don't mind sitting back and just letting things flow. So
just let it happen, as they say, huh?
But if what you're saying is I need to start having you introduce yourself first, then we can do that too.
Nah, that's all right. So tell us about the Stream Fleet Stream Tournament that you're part of.
Well, what I can tell you is this. Of course, Stream Fleet is going to be doing a 8-team, 2-weekend tournament series. And I know that this has been talked about on Twitter with Jint Yintan. And honestly, it was kind of funny because I didn't know anything about it because we, as a Band Apart or Stay Frosty, was introduced at literally the 11th hour. The story that I was told was that a couple of the teams that actually volunteered to participate backed out, and Stay Frosty was one of the teams that got brought in to replace. So we have literally had 2 weeks of scrambling and practices on Saturdays and Sundays getting things ready for this tournament. The rules
I'm hearing is excuses if you do poorly. That's all I'm hearing right now.
No. Well, okay, it'll be excuses if we fail, but if we do well, then we're gonna take it. So, no. It's actually been fun. The rules were actually kind of unique in that not only do you have to have your comps submitted so that everybody is going to know what your comp is. But your comp is also, you have 5 comps on every given day. So there's 2 days to this tournament, one on the 20th and one on the 27th. And your comps are submitted. And then instead of banning out particular ships like you do in the Alliance tournament, you ban out a comp from one of your opponents. Now, I know that our first round is going to be against Templus Kalsef, and I know that Templus has been a really tough team. We've had some challenges with Templus in the past, so but we're looking forward to taking out Templus and then facing up to our practice partners, NC. Because we've got NC. If we get past Templus, then we're going to face NC, and these guys know how we fly these comps. So it's like, ooh, this is going to be fun.
So I got to say, I heard you talking about this in the specific rules and all that stuff. And it makes me wonder if this may be, I mean, obviously this is a really cool thing that's going on, but maybe is this a good, this is a positive outcome of the Alliance tournament being taken out? And hear me out, hear me out. So like the king has died and therefore there's this vacuum, right? And in the same way in like, I'm thinking about it from like the indie game scene, right? So as people became more and more disenfranchised with AAA markets, it made indie developers more popular, and indie developers are often far more experimental and therefore push the boundaries of what is acceptable. Same thing in like movies or any other, you know, artistic creative medium. So is it possible that with the absence of the Alliance tournament, or maybe just this is a natural development, but what we're seeing is with smaller groups holding these tournaments, they're able to experiment and kind of see what else a tournament can be, right? So in this case, the tournament rules are very much similar to kind of the modern esports style where, you know, if you have different configurations of things, be it a deck or a team or whatever it is, then you can ban out one of those configurations and that you have to submit them ahead of time. And then often, you know, maybe in a tournament, if you win with one, then you can't use it again or however else you want to do it. But basically what we're seeing is because they're a smaller group, they're able to experiment with the rules and experiment with what a tournament represents in EVE Online, which I think is a very positive thing.
You know, without having any experience in any of the other esport venues, I can only kind of go, yes. But the one thing that I am very, very positive of is, and we talked about it in a previous episode, that with Alliance tournament going away this year, you know, I pretty much sat in a dark corner with a pint of Haagen-Dazs. I was sobbing about this. I mean, it was like, I love Alliance tournament. It's my biggest highlight for EVE yearly. Now, without the Alliance tournament, having some of these smaller venues coming in and filling that vacuum, not going to hurt my feelings at all because I'm a big fan of the tournament scene in EVE. So the only thing I'm hoping for is that Stream Fleet has a pretty strong following, but they're not quite CCP Twitch level. So I'm hoping that the diversity of the Stream Fleet participants, you know, all the word that has been getting out from the various Stream Fleeters, I'm hoping that that covers some of the main ground that CCP with Twitch has been able to kind of monopolize on in years past. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like basically you hope that this is as successful as a normal Alliance tournament to prove that it is a valid media, or it's a valid, you know, product.
Correct.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's popular. It's just my worry is that, you know, obviously Big Daddy CCP with Twitch has a much louder voice than your average, you know, Stream Fleet streamer. So I'm hoping that the collection of Stream Fleet kind of matches up with the loud voice of CCP and Twitch. So I'm really crossing my fingers because this is going to be fun. I mean, it's only 8 teams. It's 2 weekends, 8 teams. Yeah. And it's the brackets are going to be set up basically where if you win 2 matches, you automatically go to the next round. Okay, if you lose 2 matches, you're automatically disqualified. And if you win and lose, so if you split your difference, you get to play a 3rd round. And because there's only 8 teams, it's going to make for a relatively short period of time. Now, the other good thing that I'm really enjoying about this is it'll be on Thunderdome. So all of this, as CCP is allowing Stream Fleet to take this over into the Thunderdome server, which is going to be amazing because Thunderdome is kind of like participating in Polaris when you're participating on the AT team. Of course, everything is set up in Polaris in CCP land where this is where they teleport you to do your match. Now, doing this on Thunderdome is going to give you the same benefit, but it'll also give you the benefit of now I can have max skills and everything. You don't have to worry about whether your character is properly skilled up on Tranquility, because one of the first things that you will do on Thunderdome is to bump up all your skills to maximum.
Well, it'd be pretty hard to practice if you don't have the skills on Tranquility, though.
That's true. That's true. But a lot of times the practice that you're doing is like in preparation for an actual Alliance tournament, you're either practicing in Thunderdome or you're practicing on Singularity. The downside is you can have all the skill points you want on Singularity or in the Thunderdome, but when you participate in the Alliance tournament, you are on Tranquility.
Oh, I see. So they can practice. I didn't get that they can practice on Thunderdome too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Fair enough. The best part of being on Thunderdome is that, you know, corporations that couldn't afford to do this in game can actually have a shot of doing it, you know, in future tournaments, you know, on Thunderdome.
And this is what I meant by rethinking what a tournament can be in EVE Online, because this is kind of one of those things that's happening in general with EVE. One way or another, like it or not, we're kind of going to this postmodern process of deconstructing the old philosophies of EVE of like, you know, so the reason why Alliance Tournament and all tournaments had to be on Tranquility is because it had to be real. If it was on Singularity or Thunderdome or something else, then it wasn't real. So, but the problem with that is that that's very limiting in design space, right? Same way with the Abyss, right? Like, oh, EVE can't be instanced. What that would ruin everything. But yet, like, not having, once you're able to open that up just in that little way, how much of a design space does that open up for you that otherwise couldn't exist in EVE in the same way? So I think that this is a really good trend, by the way. But I also hope that CCP at least comes in and kind of fills in the gap. Maybe not does it themselves, but I remember before they've given out special skins to player tournaments to be given away to the winners or whatnot. It'd be interesting if they could do at least that again. Although I do say that with both CCP Guard and CCP Lajubo's position vacant, I wouldn't get your hopes up too much at this time, at least until we have new people in those positions.
Hey, maybe we should introduce the late person who finally decided to join us tonight.
Yeah, now that there's a little break, Hendo, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello.
Hey, Hendo, how's it going?
Going all right. Sorry I was late, guys. I didn't see the ping.
Yeah, no worries, man. Good. We're going to hope this time we'll keep this this actual recording this time as opposed to last time you decided to join us.
Oh, it'll be safe.
Would you like to let our listeners know who you fly with, etc.?
I fly solo. I am a free agent at the moment. I used to fly with FCON way back before World War B. I tried wormholes out with another corporation. Didn't work out. Everybody went back to playing WoW. So now I just do my own thing, running events now.
Cool.
Well, nice. And it was timely that you joined us when you did, because are you not part of the Streamfleet group?
Well, I am part of the Streamfleet group. I just don't, my stream is on hiatus technically.
Ah, okay. Well, cause we're talking about the Streamfleet tournament that's going to be coming up on the 20th and the 27th. So
yeah, Jintan has put a lot of elbow grease into that.
I'm excited. I can't wait. It's going to be a challenge. We've had to throw together some interesting comps. When you put together a comp, you cannot reuse a ship for a day. So as part of our comp, we were giving a list of what specifications we could operate within. And then if you choose a ship to go in comp number one, it cannot be in any other of the four comps that you have to submit. So you literally have to plan out exactly how you want your ships to work with each other and then make sure that you have an alternative for down into another comp so that, you know, not putting all your best eggs in one basket, so to speak.
Yeah, I get that, and it makes you have to use the actual versatility of the frame.
All I know is that it's been a fun couple of practices so far. NC has been great for a practice team, and I am so looking forward to the 20th when we get to start this.
Nice. And also, I said this on Twitter, but I'm also going to say it here. My appearance at Eve North has been canceled.
Care to go into why or just personal?
Yeah, I'll go into it lightly. While renewing my passport, I found out in the process, I had to renew my license, obviously, beforehand, that I had an outstanding traffic violation in the state I used to be stationed in that my previous lawyer did not appear to. So my license is suspended in a different state right now. So I have to get an attorney and resolve that before I can get all that rolling. And with Eve North coming up so soon, I won't have it done in time.
Well, that sucks.
Well, at least you found out about it, though.
Yeah, well, that does suck. Yeah, it does suck, but I will be doing my best to make it to Eve Vegas this year. So
my Eve event traveling this year is going to be it's going to be questionable at this point. So I found out that my previous roommate is indeed going. So he contacted me and wanted to know if I was going to be going. So I still have to get approval from the my social secretary. So
oh, and I will be at Rick Jarvis's meetup in Pennsylvania. I'll be making a road trip.
Nice. That's a good time. I was there last year. So Steel City is a lot of fun. Very, very relaxed, very casual meetup. It's held at Rick's and Liz's house. And it's just, you know, weather, you know, obviously weather depending, but had a barbecue in the back. And, you know, there were like 15, 20 that showed up last year. And it was a good time. It was just kind of nice to sit down and chat.
It was great. And I'm sorry for the segue. Let's get back to talking Eve and tournaments.
Well, I know that, Ash, you had mentioned something about skins. Now, they do have prizes listed, and I am not familiar with any of these skins, but I'm assuming that they are available skins. It doesn't say anything that these were specifically created for the tournament. So I'm assuming.
Can you post the link?
Yeah, one sec.
Also, did this have any sort of entry fee or anything, or just kind of volunteers?
Well, isn't it all members of Streamfleet?
Is Random part of Streamfleet?
Negative. I am not part of it. And like I said, neither is, as far as I know, Stay Frosty isn't, unless you consider Tavares, who Space Princess Tavares is on Streamfleet, and he is part of a band apart. So that might be why we were considered for an in, but I don't know. This is all stuff that happened above my pay grade.
Got it.
So the prizes that they're talking about this year, and they're talking about prizes for first, second, and third place. First place is an Apostle Lava Core Imperial skin and 500 plex per player. Now, the Apostle Lava Core, I'm assuming, is a...
That's purchasable on the store.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured. Second place is a Drekovac Meta Materia Exotica skin and 200 plex per person. And third place is a Hecate Kale Neon skin and 100 plex per player. So, you know, I mean, personally, I don't care if as far as I'm concerned, I'd be happy just for a nice little in-game medal or something. But for me, this is fun.
Ironically, the in-game medal would be harder because you can only give medals to people within your corporation.
Yeah, but as far as AT participation, CCP has made in-game medals in the past, so that they have been given out specifically from CCP to the alliance that participated.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice. Like I said, it's kind of an awkward time right now for those of us who want to work with CCP in order to advertise and sell their own game. But, you know, I think it's like this is definitely something that's really cool and worth experimenting with. And I think we're going to learn a lot of lessons from it either way. And it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, the good thing is... the schedule, the upcoming schedule for this, it will be next Saturday is going to be the 20th. They will be starting at 2000 hours game time. Same thing with the 27th. That will be a 2000 hour start time with recap shows on the 24th and May 1st. So I'm looking forward to it. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and to speak as a stream fleet more broadly, I really like this effort to kind of combine the various minds of streamers in EVE. You know, streaming EVE is a really, really hard thing to do. It takes more technical talent. It takes more entertainment talent if you want to be successful than a lot of other video games, to be honest, because you have to hide all of your intel. You have to be interesting when the game isn't, which, spoiler alert, is a lot of the time. You know,
that's the preach.
Yeah. It's and then on top of that, you know, streaming is like EVE isn't the most popular one to play. So it's very much a labor of love for anyone who does it. So it's amazing to me. And I'm really glad to see kind of the community pulled together to pool their resources, both with Streamfleet and also like the creatives Discord. You know, we're already able to see things like this tournament and other things come from the fact that people are collaborating on so many cool things. It's kind of like what happened with podcasts back in like way back in the day and blogs, like back when those were the advanced technology back in like 2011 when I first started playing. So maybe this is just like the next iteration. This is the next blog chain or whatever it was.
Well, and the nice thing too about this particular tournament is they're really drawing on the talent pool from the Alliance tournament as well, because I don't remember all the names of the people who are going to be doing the announcing, but I know I remember seeing Elise Randolph and Chocolate Rain on the list. So, you know, these are people who are very well experienced in at least announcing the tournament. And I'm looking forward to listening to all the people who are going to lose to us this year. I'm sorry, did that come across as kind of cocky? I should shut up.
It did. Yeah. It did. But hey, now that's part of the shit talking of the tournament, right?
I believe sure. Most of the core people from Eventee moved over or is helping out in some way with Streamfleet. I mean, those guys are super pro community. You know, at least we'll be there. He's no matter what you suggest him, he's like, yeah, it sounds like fun, you know. He's down for anything when it comes to community building stuff.
Right. Yeah, Raiden is amazing, and him and Uriel, when they get together, it's like magic.
Oh, cool. So are we ready to move on to the
update? Last thing I want to add is that I hope that we somehow, maybe I can even do it, I don't even know, do some sort of like highlights after in commentary after the fact, because as I think I said last time, I think that that's one of the things that we're really missing from like an esports point of view, because it's sometimes very difficult to comment in the moment. So if you had like you know, the after show where like sports, I'm not into sports, so somebody's got to maybe help me, but usually there's like a desk and there's like four or five smart people talking about the important football stuff from earlier in the morning and telling you why it was all important, right?
We need the recap. It's also called a play-by-play.
I've heard that phrase. We need EVE play-by-play.
Well, and actually on the link, and we could put the link up on the website, but the link does show that on the 24th, there is a day one recap, which is 4 days after the first round. And then on May 1st, there is a recap, which is a few days after the second round. So if you are unable to watch the actual tournament days, there will be two recap shows, one after each tournament day, that you can at least sit back and assumedly listen to the professionals talk about how great everybody was.
All right. Well, good. I'm glad they listened.
Yep. They took that into account for you, Ash.
They're so good. They went all the way into the past and they did it retroactively. I'm impressed.
Indeed, indeed. So let's jump the track here. Let's go to something else. We just had our update here just a few days ago. Anybody had a chance to actually play the game since the April update?
A couple times. I actually I lost a few weeks to Stellaris, but in the last week I've done some Abyss and I've done some mining. I haven't really like dropped any faxes or anything, but I never did that beforehand. So,
yeah, same here.
I haven't played, but the rebalancing is very, very interesting to me that they did on the 9th.
I've played some. I've noticed the anomalies being a little more harder to spawn again, or taking longer to spawn.
Yeah, the most interesting thing that's come out of it so far for me is the fact that the Vexor Navy issue has actually increased in price, which is bizarre. But then when I was looking into it, I was even further confused because the Vexor Navy issue, it looks like the price like dropped in half almost last summer. And I could not figure out what event would have caused the VNI to, the price to crash so much. So like it did go up after the balance, pass has been announced, and it's remained up since then because people have figured out that actually, ironically, the Vexor Navy issue is now better at applying its damage now that the drones are slower, which is kind of awkward.
Well, it's better at applying damage for the originally slow drones, the heavy drones. I mean, getting that speed boost, did it really mess them up that bad? You know, by losing that speed boost that they get, are the heavy drones actually that much better?
From my understanding, instead of a nerf, it actually increased their throughput. I haven't experimented with it myself, but that is what I have heard.
As somebody who used to run Triglavian sites in a Vexor Navy issue before this patch, those drones would move so fast they missed astronomically like amount. It'd be like 30 seconds
on the heavies.
In single hit. Even on the heavies, they would miss a lot because they'd just be zipping around so fast.
The problem is that they're slow, but they also don't have the best tracking themselves. So if they're rotating fast enough, it doesn't really matter. They do a really tight orbit, so they can out-track themselves.
Exactly.
So basically, yeah. CCP nerfed the VNI into a better position.
I mean, it's still too early to tell, but the market seems to suggest that. And everything I've heard, like I said, I haven't personally tested it myself, but it would appear so, which is kind of fun.
And yeah, hey, cool. The Carrico Navy issue getting drones, that's interesting to me.
I was going to say, now, I haven't flown a Carrico Navy. Has anybody on the panel here flown a CNI to see did it make any difference whatsoever?
Negative.
I mean, having a full flight of lights is, I mean, it's always nice to have something like that.
It's in an odd place because the primary application for that Carrico fleet being upgraded to the Carrico Navy issue it just doesn't work right now. Like, you would need small gang warfare. By small gang, I mean like 20 to 30 man gang. So mid gang warfare in low sec, pretty much. Because Caracals in particular shine when there isn't bubbles, when kiting is like basically unchallenged, and they can hit the threshold of damage, right? So they're not taking so much damage that they're losing their numbers, but because of their rapid lights, they can rip apart somebody before they can respond, right? So they hit their alpha before the enemy does. So there's kind of this sweet spot of about 25 to 30 caracals that are just scary already. So if you bring that up to Carrico Navy issues, they'll be even deadlier. But the problem is that the game doesn't, the meta isn't there right now, so I don't think it's being tested, but I don't know anything, so who knows?
Yeah, those Carrico groups are amazing. They were great for running drifter sites.
So, okay, well, I guess it's just a matter of, and of course, I don't know about anybody else, but have you noticed that it seems to be a little bit quieter in EVE? Are we getting into that summer slowdown right now?
I feel like it's heating up in Nullsec.
Maybe that's the case. Maybe it's just because the area that I'm in, now granted we're talking, it's high sec, but the particular area of high sec that I'm in has been really, really busy with one particular aspect, but in general has been much quieter. So I'm starting, I've been literally sitting back going, starting to wonder if we're getting into the summer slowdown already.
Maybe they're all just coming to Null to have the fun with the rest of us.
That's what I was just thinking. Maybe they're going to have fun with you guys.
Well, isn't it also like spring break or something for a lot of kids? So a lot of people have families in EVE, you know.
Yeah, past 2 weeks. I know 2 weeks ago was my kids or my wife's spring break. She's a teacher. This week's another spring break for some people I know. So yeah, it is spring break time.
That is true. That is true. Last week was spring break for us as well. So, all right. Well, let me ask, Wardex. Anybody notice the changes that came in, the big thing? And now, I don't remember talking about this. We may have on a previous episode, but I don't remember discussing this. And then all of a sudden, boom, we find out that neutral assistance has been removed as far as Wardex stuff goes. Anybody make particular note of this?
Yeah, I did notice that. That's so in order to participate now, you have to straight up choose a side.
Well, which is great.
You can't be like a freelance mercenary anymore.
The big thing that I've found is that, you know, I've not been involved in a lot of high sec war decks, but I have been involved in enough to know that when you get people who are neutral, especially neutral logi, who can really throw off a high sec war deck engagement. And I know that sounds weird. That's not the kind of word pattern you throw together, but I have been involved. It was a while ago, but I was involved with a group that specifically did high sec war decks. And it was, it's very offsetting to have somebody who can jump in as a neutral booster or a neutral logi, either, you know, if they're on your side, it heavily influences your positive, or if it's on the other side, it's heavily negative towards you. But now if you get involved, you're a valid target or you get concorded.
I think it's the way it's always should have been, in my opinion.
I agree. It's one of those deals that at the very minimum, they should become a target. You know, if you're a neutral person, you decide to throw a neutral rep on an actual war deck engagement that's going on. If you're a neutral alt and you throw a rep in there, you should automatically become a target. You should automatically be eligible to shoot.
Well, that's right now, if you are, well, not right now, but prior to this change, if you were not in the same corp as the person, then you would get a suspect flag. And that actually caused some awkwardness in other ways too. So I actually really like this change just so that you don't accidentally suspect flag yourself.
Yeah, that is a very, very positive thing.
I have noticed, I don't know if you guys have, but you know, it's hard to, it isn't one of those things that rises to the high levels of Reddit, especially in the last few weeks, with certain other events basically blasting everything else off the front page of Reddit. But
we'll
from my
talk
understanding,
about that in a bit.
Yeah, foreshadowing. Where was I? Oh, yeah. So what I've noticed is that a lot of the high sec pirate organizations are somewhat struggling under the new paradigm to either remain relevant or predatory. I think I've seen some stuff about various organizations either quitting or turning against each other. Again, I'm not reporting anything because I'm not 100% sure, but I have noticed some interesting reports from the corporations that used to benefit from high sec war decks the most.
Well, and I think, you know, with the neutral assistance, I'm sure that was kind of a thorn in a lot of people's side, but it sounds like the upcoming changes for May on this pathway for war deck revamp, this next month is going to be the interesting one, I think. Well, the war headquarters, something that we've talked about and something that we'd all kind of hoped about. Now, coming up in May, if you are a war decking group, you have to put a little skin in the game now. And coming up in May, you've got to have a headquarters. It's got to be a high sec headquarters. And it's got to be available for basically people to come and attack.
Was that confirmed for May?
That is listed under the May changes. It says high deck headquarters. After the May release, whenever a corporation or alliance declares a non-mutual war, they will be required to select a specific upwell structure, and it has to be a structure, not a flex structure, that they own somewhere in high sec, and that structure is going to be designated the war headquarters. And basically, if anything happens to that war headquarters, if it comes out of the corporation's name, if it is blown up, if it is repackaged, it automatically puts the war deck into a cooldown.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, this is actually, for me, this is the feather in my cap, because this is what I believe that we've been saying for a very, very long time, in the fact that there should be a component. I mean, I've been saying this since there was a captain's quarters, for Christ's sake. So,
sure.
you know, basically what this does is it allows the person who's being attacked the ability through espionage or strength of arms to end the war themselves, which is the key that wars have always needed beyond anything else in high sec.
Well, and the big thing too is that a lot of the war decks that occur, and I mean, we've even seen the numbers on this, a lot of the war decks that occur are from groups like Pirate or Marmite going against small to medium industrial corps in high sec, you know, corps that don't really have the ability to defend themselves. So it becomes kind of basically all it does is it stops you from going into the trade hubs for a week. Now when groups like Pirate or Marmite have to put a headquarters up and make it available, you know, there's a possibility at catching them on an off time. Now, all of a sudden, I and my little group of ragtag industrialists, we could load up on ships and maybe catch them in an off time and knock their structure into reinforcement.
Or pay somebody to go knock their stuff into reinforcement.
I have a weird question about this. So if the war headquarters goes offline, then the war ends within 24 hours, correct?
It goes into the cooldown period, yep.
So do you not get a chance to kill the Astrahus, or the structure? Or do you have to re-war deck them in order to hit them for the final timer?
No, I'm assuming you can take it to the final timer. It's if the structure is destroyed, then the war deck is over. Then it goes into the cooldown.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Once the second timer is done, all of the service modules turn off.
Yeah, but I don't think that's part of the requirement of actually having the war headquarters. It just says you have to name an Upwell structure as your war HQ.
Oh, okay. So it's not actually a module that you have to pay fuel for. Oh,
no, halfway there. So basically what it is if I throw up an Astrahus, I mean, it could be a bone empty Astrahus, and I can proclaim that to be my war headquarters. So the problem is if you do not have an active module inside that HQ, then you only have two timers, correct? Yeah, because you lose out. Yeah, one. The one timer. You lose out on the big timer by not having an active module.
You would have a
it goes into low power.
As an armor timer and a hull timer.
Correct.
But the armor timer is always vulnerable though, right? So you only have one timer, correct?
No. So if it's low power, then it's just straight up from shield to hull.
Right.
Shield is always vulnerable. Okay. If it has high power, then it goes shield, armor, hull.
That's right. My bad.
Okay. So basically, if you're going to assign an Astrahus or something as your war HQ, if you don't have an active module in it, you've got your shield and then you've got your hull timer. So if you have an active module in it, then of course you gain that armor timer, which will stretch everything out as far as taking it back. So if I was a high sec war deck group, you know, honestly, I think I would put a keep star up and then put a clone bay in it as an active module. And, you know, it's going to take a long time for a little group to tear one of those down.
Unless a lot of little groups team up against it.
Yeah, there is that.
If Marmite and Pirate continue on war decking 20 or 30 corporations at a time, or however many they're up to.
Now,
that's how coalitions happen.
The only problem is you have to have a separate structure for each war deck.
Do you?
Yes. What? I think if what I read was true, you have to have a separate HQ for each war deck. You can't have six war decks and all of them with the same HQ. At least that's what I understood.
So literally, if they want to continue the 20 to 30 war decks, they have to have 20 to 30 keep stars.
I don't. Well, or Aster Hooses, but I don't.
Well, I mean, the ideal that Random was talking about, the ideal Citadel.
That would be interesting. And then they'd have to have a lot of active modules and fuel in all of them. That'd be a lot more logistics than I would expect out of a war deck group like we traditionally see.
Well, that's go ahead.
If that change is correct, then you got to have multiple structures. That's going to be just, I mean, I'm actually glad to have that, but it just seems kind of weird that these people would do that. I hadn't read that anywhere.
I don't see anything that would suggest that it has to be a unique thing. It says the most significant changes of the expansive of our upcoming changes are the currently planned for the May release. The May changes are intended to provide clearer and more specific goals to defenders and war declarations. Oh, you figured out your boo-boo?
I found out it says they may choose so. So it says one of the lines here is corporations or alliances with multiple outgoing wars may choose to spread out their war HQs for their wars across multiple structures or use the same structures as HQs for multiple wars as they wish. Okay, my bad. I was way off on that one.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, but it, you know, I suppose it makes some more sense because if you get a group like Pirate or Marmite that tend to have several active war decks in one given time, you know, it'd be kind of fun with, you know, hey, I'm War Deck Corp A. I'm going to contact War Deck Corp B and go, you know, we could put a lot of pressure on these guys and have some fun.
Or I could separate my war HQs between several ones so you guys can't unite on gets one.
Exactly.
Individually.
To me, it would make more sense because if, you know, first of all, if you're a group like Marmite or Pirate, you've probably got a fairly substantial wallet to begin with. If you were to pick up two keep stars and put them up and then put an active module with fuel in them, you know, teeny tiny little indie group is not going to be able to take out a keep star. Not going to happen. And I mean, the only way they're going to be able to do it is by hiring it out. You know, they're going to have to hire a mercenary group to do it. But, you know, they cannot generate enough DPS to make it worthwhile. So if you are going to spread it out over several of them, I mean, having it spread out may allow you to war deck slightly larger targets and not have to worry about your HQ being taken out. Whereas if you put up an Astrahoose and you war deck three little industrial groups, well, those three little industrial groups could dogpile on it.
You're missing the biggest key to this.
I could. Well, that's not out of the question. What am I missing?
So I've got multiple structures. I can assign different wars to different structures. Anytime I want to end the war, I just pull a structure.
Right.
Isn't that a benefit? I don't know. Maybe it's not. But by spreading it out, I can make sure, like, I can put my wars in a block. And so that way I can be like, oh, well, I want to end this war now without necessarily ending all of the other wars. Or more importantly, if I want to have risky wars or non-risky wars, I don't necessarily want to attract them. Also, this is public information. So if it sends it to the defenders, hey, this is my war station. So not just like coordinated teaming up, but you just maybe you want them all harassing the same structure, or maybe you don't want them all harassing the same structure. It depends on what your strategy is here.
Well, certainly. And that's why, you know, it's going to be fun to see how this is going to play out. Because like I said, if you're a group like Pirate or a group like Marmite, that you have a pretty thick wallet to begin with, if you put up two structures and you put them, you know, a fair distance apart and you have two war decks going on, okay, if the structures are strong enough to maintain against a small to medium industrial group, you're not going to have to worry about it. I mean, you can play business as usual. It's like, yeah, I'm not going to worry about, you know, 12 miners taking out my keep star. Not going to happen.
The other thing is that you got to remember that it, you know, it isn't necessarily the structure, it's the defense, right?
Right. But, you know, here's the thing. You could put a defense on a keep star and it doesn't cost you anything. I mean, other than ISK. You know, you buy the modules, you put the modules on the keep star. It doesn't add anything to the fuel cost. It's only having the arrays on it. That's what adds to the fuel cost. So you could put a heavy tank on it. You could put a light tank on it. You know, it's not going to make a big difference other than just in the financial aspect.
Either way, this speaks to a much bigger thing, that which is that in EVE, especially in high sec, one of the principal frustrations is that in this game of freedom of choice, there is often no recourse to harassment.
Exactly, which is why this is going to be great, because it'll now give the war decked group an opportunity to go after something to, if not to defend themselves, but at least have an opportunity to make the war deck end early.
And gives them basic intel, right? So if pirate war decks me, I have no idea where all their structures are. I don't know what wormholes they're in. I don't know anything from anything. But in this case, I know exactly where my target is.
Precisely, which is why it's going to be a lot more fun now, I think, with war decks, because if you are the deck-E, not the decker, you know, the deck-E, now I have a target that I can go shoot at. And as long as I pay attention and see when they're around, if you could catch them on an off time, what the hell?
And I think that this will actually make things better for the war deckers, too, because, you know, you war deck people so that you can fight them. But the problem is that with no successful recourse, the best strategy is to avoid a fight. And therefore, most war decks involve no deaths at all. So this will encourage or incentivize the person, especially as a CEO, right? Now, if I tell my people, hey, we're not going to log in because we have a war deck, what does that tell me about me as a CEO? Prior to this, that just made me a normal high sec CEO that's just dealing with the problems of being in high sec. But after this, it is, you are the CEO that can't fix your corpse problems.
You had something you were going to add to that, Opus?
I was just agreeing with him.
Yeah, this is going to be, it's going to start shining the spotlight down on a few people.
Which is great, because I mean, like, all of these changes are so good for corporations, right? So now you can have corporations that aren't war deckable. You can have corporations that are, you know, fighting one another. You can have corporations that are taking a risk, and they can shift between these different focuses and grow and experiment with what they want to do in EVE, which is something that EVE has always needed because of the nature of EVE, and therefore, and never really has. I actually made a tweet the other day about how it's like, you know, we tell people that you need to learn from people, but you can't trust anybody, right? Every choice matters, but don't be risk averse. You know, it's like, come on, man, we gotta fix some of this cognitive dissonance.
Well, we're going to move on as part of the war changes, because there's two other changes that are going to come up here. The war HQ coming up in May is going to be amazing. That's going to be the highlight of this thing. But the other thing that really caught me was the change in cost. Up until this point, war decks have cost anywhere from 50 to 500 million ISK a week. That's going away. The formula that they use to figure this out, going away. Straight, flat, 100 million a week. Period.
Yeah, this is by far the dumbest thing about the old war deck system when they changed it. They made it so the larger organizations were harder to war deck, which I guess, like, on the surface, you could think like, oh, we have to bribe Concord more because it's a bigger organization, more well-known or something. But ultimately, all it did was protect the big guys that didn't need protection. So flat rate makes so much more sense.
Indeed, indeed. And then the third change that they're going to have. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, also it means nobody's going to feel like they need to pack their corp full of alts that aren't being used for anything, or try to create an alliance instead of just having a corp to try to prevent, you know, make the cost of war more expensive.
Exactly. Right. The umbrellas that, I mean, because I'll be honest with you, my indie corp is in an alliance purely for the alliance umbrella. Because it's so much more expensive to war deck an alliance than it is a corp.
Right.
So you're going to destroy the alliance in next month then?
No, I'll keep it around. What the hell? But the third one, that's the third change that's coming up, improved mutual wars. This one probably isn't going to be as much of a big thing, but you take a look at groups like Red versus Blue and the Forever War they have going on. It's just going to simplify things a little bit for them.
In this case, I would say that this is CCP respecting the nature of EVE Online and the nature of EVE Online players, right? So this is literally just the shovel. You know, you can, if you want to do mutual wars, this is how you do it. Now, what you want to do with that is up to you, and things like red versus blue, tournaments, your own faction warfare, RP groups, whatever it is, right? You know, they're respecting the fact that people do use the war system for in these mechanisms and ensuring that the sandbox still has those tools.
Right. But I mean, other than, you know, I mean, it's as far as changes go, it's not going to be a huge dramatic change. It's just going to make the groups that do use this technique, you know, it's going to be a little bit easier for you.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just allowing us to have additional tools, not necessarily, you know, not every shovel gets used. Some of them are really weird looking. Sit on the side.
All right. So that's war. We've had another little war that's occurred and kind of broke earlier this week. Anybody know this guy, this CSM guy, Brisk Rubel?
Oh, dear. Yeah. I certainly didn't talk about him for like 24 hours straight in the Talking in Stations Discord this at the beginning of this week, for sure.
Yeah, sure, totally. On Monday.
Anywho, yeah, so we're going to talk very briefly about, we're going to at least like talk about what happened, but really I think that we should focus on kind of the side issues that came out of this, because a lot of people have spent a lot of air on this, and we haven't really gotten anywhere. So what has happened?
Well, more precisely, I'm sorry, Ash, but more precisely, any conversations are going to be pretty much ending at the same point with, we won't know, CCP won't say anything.
Yeah, and it just gets conspiracy theory. And while I love my tinfoil, I like to keep it in game. Oh,
that tinfoil was made out of uranium in that forum post. That was toxic. I got three shots to prove it.
So, for those of you who are not aware, there is a guy in-game called Brisk Rubel, who ran for the CSM and won on the platform that he was a real-life politician and leveraged that as in order to get elected, including using his actual real-life Twitter handle like he uses for his politics as also for his EVE, which was kind of alarming. But either way, it got him elected. Which was all great. He was a very proud member of the CSM. He was very active on the podcasts. He was one of the more vocal CSM members to help communicate what was going on. And, you know, he brought his charisma with him to the position. And that's why it surprised everyone on Monday, or at least mostly everyone, when he was permanently banned from the game and removed from the CSM. And two of his buddies were removed for, were banned for a year and had a lot of stuff taken from them because allegedly, Brisk gave his friend a corp mate information, and then a different corp mate used that information in order to gain some sort of advantage that seemingly had to do with ISK and assets because that was what was seized. No one's for sure exactly what it was, but one of the things that we do know from it is that they said that electronic devices will no longer be allowed at the summits, so chances are there was some sort of communication of upcoming events from the summit that was used for nefarious purposes. It's a very unfortunate thing, but the most unfortunate thing about it is the fact that it has become amazingly public. It, of course, lit a fire under the EVE community instantly as a CSM member was removed. But the problem is that the headline, what is it? Republican lobbyist banned from a video game due to corruption scandal is a way, way more interesting headline and is basically what this has evolved into. And so his real life has gotten dragged into this in a very... dangerous way, and has kind of become a wake-up moment for a lot of people. So far, there hasn't been any further resolution besides that original blog, and that's where we're at right now. So there's some lessons to be learned and a discussion to be had.
And I think go ahead, Henry.
Well, and also, like I said, I watched the forum for the first 24 hours of it all, and there seems to be a lot of confusion with Brisk and who he is. He's always been pretty open that he lobbies for the Maritime Union as a Republican lawyer out of Virginia. He's never outright told people he is a congressman or a sitting senator. That got spewed around on both sides. I noticed a lot of people just arguing that point instead of the facts of the matter. So I would just like to clear that up, because I have spoken to the man myself on numerous occasions before this whole incident.
That actually surprised me too, because I never really fact checked it, but that was like a lot of people seemingly said that about him almost like shorthand. From my understanding, he's a former like official politician.
He ran for office and didn't get it, but he's always been a lawyer and a lobbyist for the maritime unions, for like the Teamsters on the Virginia coast, and that's what he mainly does in Washington. He just lobbies for policies friendly to fishermen and shipping on the Virginia coast.
Yeah, not all lobbyists are inherently evil, but some of them apparently scam internet spaceships.
Hey, that's an allegation. Ooh,
I said allegedly.
Oh, come on now. You got to throw the word alleged. You got to throw the word allegedly in there, because
I used the wrong A word. I'm sorry. I said apparently. So, I meant allegedly. Like POS instead of POCO.
Yep.
Oh,
Anyway.
I just wanted to clear up that little bit of semantics, because I noticed that in the forum post too. People were trying to say like he was like a big oil lobbyist trying to screw people out of money. And people were trying to say he was like a great senator from somewhere and couldn't show where he held the seat from. It was just ridiculous on both sides.
Well, I think, you know, as Ash alluded to when we first started the topic, we want to talk about the repercussions of what happened between CCP and Brisk, not so much what's going on right now with Brisk.
Yeah. I just wanted to set that.
It's good to set that clear, because, you know, honestly, when I'll be honest, I was probably part of that misinformation spreading, because I thought he was a sitting senator or congressman or something. So finding out that he is a lobbyist is kind of puts things in a different perspective. However, I think the place that we were going to go about talking about this is when you attach your in-game persona to your in-real-life persona, and specifically to your name, there's going to be an inherent danger there in something like this happening.
Yeah, it's self-doxing. That's what it is. It's self-doxing.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's very dangerous to do that.
Yeah, this is the reason several years ago they removed the requirement for CSM candidates to release their real name on the forums.
I can kind of understand where Brisk is coming from, because he's already a public figure. So he's already used to like certain harassment. I'm sure he probably already has, you know, local law enforcement, you know, knowing who he is. So there's not like a problem with getting swatted or anything crazy like that. But still, he should have known, you know, he should have went under an alias still.
Well, he released a statement today at Hogan Stations where basically he realized that he, quote unquote, doxed himself, but he knew that without that information and, you know, and people knew inside his corp without the him putting forth who he was and all that, that he would not get elected the first time, right? Like, he understood that if he ran, the way he's going to get elected is this part of his campaign, is who he is in real life. And he
full transparency. And right. I respect that.
And that goes into a thing where that EVE Online, being more than just a video game, but as like a broader hobby almost, a lot of people leverage their real life talents in video games, like, you know, Rick Javix and others, you know, bring real life talent out that exists outside of the game and to the game, and that does begin to blur the line. And when that talent involves being a public figure, then it's really a catch 22, which is one of the reasons why I find this allegation so outstanding, because, you know, it seems like a dramatic thing for someone in a public space that has revealed their information to do. But, you know, that is what it is. I would say that also Commander Aze, I guess, has officially suspended his campaign for the CSM, citing not only this event, but actually at EVE Vegas, apparently there was some sort of customs problem that he assisted with, because he's got some, he's in, I don't know all the details. There's apparently, there's a post on Reddit, and I don't really want to go into it because that even sounds like another nasty situation. But either way, he helped out or with CSM with customs, and apparently that made it to the newspapers. So he was already kind of sketchy about everything, but with this coming out, you know, people are just becoming more concerned about being on the CSM.
Okay, did not make it to the newspapers. He is a government official. I say government official. He works for the government. And the IG, the internal governments from his area, actually found out about the phone call he made to customs in Las Vegas airport and called him about it and gave him questions no more than like 3 or 4 hours after it happened.
Okay, newspapers was a stretch. It made it to massively overpowered, all right?
Right. So all of a sudden, like, bosses that control his bosses that oversee his bosses got involved with just him saying he made a phone call. And this was on his Commander A's Twitter. It wasn't put out there with his real name. So just a quick searching or just a quick info from or just a quick blip of him, his game name, his in-game name, making this, saying he did this, or Falcon saying he did this, got back to his real life work. So that's the reason why he's bowing out of the CSM run, which he's ran for 5 years straight, and this year he's likely to get it, is because if that, you know, that happened with just a phone call, what, you know, what would a press release or something else along the lines of happening to Briss do to, you know, potentially someone's career?
Right. And this isn't about whether or not, you know, he did it or not or anything like that. This is about the fact that one of the things that came out of this was that Brisk was not communicated with prior to this. So, you know, the CSM, not only was he not allowed to defend himself, but he wasn't allowed to brace for, you know, this news getting out in his real life and deal with it. So, you know, it's one thing to enact a ban on a player without having to show your justifications or reasoning. Like, all of that kind of makes, you know, obviously makes sense. And even the, like, rules against publishing GM correspondences somewhat make sense. But when you're dealing it with people that are extremely well-known and connected, like, through the CSM, even if their identity isn't, their real-life identity isn't fully exposed, you know, CCP... I believe should be more respectful to them in this case. And you, what you're seeing is concern from people because of their apparent lack of respect for that.
Right.
Like, yeah. My concern with this whole situation is I understand that under terms of service, CCP can ban any of us today for life because it's their IP. But the fact that this is regarding an NDA, which I have never read the CSM NDAs. I don't know what the stipulations are within it. But to my understanding, there would have to be some kind of, you have to be informed that you are in breach of this NDA or at least notified in some way. That's why this lack of communication with Brisk also concerns me like it does Ash.
Right.
I don't think in previous examples the person has necessarily been talked to that much beforehand. But then again, in previous examples, what has been said was this person has been removed, nothing further. And then there's no more official comment from CCP at all. There's no specific allegation.
Yeah, that's what surprised me. And it's probably the most troublesome for Brisk going forward is the fact that CCP came out and said it was for breach of trust, as opposed to just we're removing him for an unspecified reason.
Yeah, the fact that they mentioned the NDA and this was regarding that, you know, like that's where I believe that Brisk is really standing on that, you know, he's probably going to pursue at least trying to get counsel to talk to CCP about this. I don't know anything about actually getting anything back because, like I already stated, we all know TOS, they can ban any of us for any reason. But as far as, you know, publicly saying he's in breach of NDA without informing him, I don't know exactly how that works legally, and that's what I think he's going to be pursuing.
Yeah, but what it all boils down to is this. It is still CCP's intellectual property. It is still their game, and it is still their rules. And regardless, exactly. regardless of whether we feel that they are fair, unfair, justified, or unjustified, basically, you said so earlier, Hendo, CCP has the right to turn around and say, you are done. Get out of the pool. Never come back. And, you know, they don't have to explain. It's their game. You know, we pay for the privilege of being able to participate in this big sandbox. And, you know, if we do, and honestly, compared to a lot of games, a lot of us players get away with some pretty liberal shit. You know,
liberal CCP, doesn't begin.
Yeah, as in CCP is allowing us to do quite a bit. But when they finally draw their toe in the line and say, you stepped over it, you know, technically, they don't have to tell you that what you did. They could just say, you know, you're done. See you. Bye.
You're absolutely correct. They don't have to, but there are consequences to your actions. And so, yeah, you don't have to tell them anything, but Commander A's doesn't have to try to be on the CSM. And that's the real question, is this broader conversation that has come up, especially while right before the CSM elections, as we are right now. Every year, there's kind of this conversation about whether or not the CSM still has a purpose, or yes. whether or not it's still yes. Valuable. And this has put that conversation in a very specific light. And so, yeah, CCP can absolutely do it this way. And you know what? It could end the CSM for it one way or another. And that's their choice. But I personally feel... other people can disagree. I personally feel that that EVE Online would be a worse place if we didn't have the CSM.
I concur. I totally concur.
And the thing is, too, like y'all just said, Commander Ace doesn't have to run. Nobody has to run. It's a volunteer consulting group for a video game that you do in your spare time. Nobody has to run. If it's threatening your actual livelihood, which this whole incident with Brisk actually has revealed that, you know, and, you know, like you guys just said, what happened with Commander Ace not too long ago, you know, people calling his bosses and massively overpowered, you know, trying to run a little smear piece on them or whatever they tried to do.
Yeah, but the problem is when you put your real life name to your in-game persona, okay, you may be able to leverage some of your real life position or status or charisma. You may be able to use some of that stuff in your real life to leverage it into your your in-game stuff. But then
you didn't have to do that. You don't have to.
You didn't have to do that. Okay. You did that by choice so that if something happens in game and there's a repercussion, you can't go, wait a minute, that's not fair. You play the game, you take your chances, so to speak. You know, it's part of me feels sorry for him, because if there is potential blowback in his real life, you know, in his real life job because of something that happened in a video game. I mean, I feel bad, but he kind of brought that on himself by using his real life position to leverage into his real game. You know, kind of the same thing with Commander Ace. Now, I know a little bit about that particular customs phone call because I was working with the volunteer group at the time. And it's one of those scenarios where, you know, we all sat back and went, wow, that was so cool. Thank you for helping customs send CCP's stuff through so we could have a successful EVE Vegas. But if Commander Ace has got in trouble because of it, then you have to kind of go, well, that's not really CCP's fault. That was a judgment call that each particular person made. And now you have to accept the ramifications for doing those sorts of things.
Well, no good deed goes unpunished.
But I don't think exactly. It comes down to, I mean, Ace's case in that particular instance, yes, he made that personal decision himself. But we can all Google our names, and eventually you'll find out who we are, right? Like, I mean, especially some of us have been using, you know, our handles in other video games, whatever, for a long time. You eventually track down who we are for real, right? No one is anonymous.
Some of us are easier to find than others.
Right.
Several emails.
The thing is that it really does, the impact is the kind of candidates that we will see going forward, right? Because if people don't feel that they can be protected from that, then you're not going to get people with a real public figure. You're not going to get people that are public figures outside of Eve trying to be CSM, which, I mean, that might be a good thing, ultimately. I don't know. But I think my question is, what?
Well, I was going to say, what about the quality of people that's going to run, though, right? Like, if splurglers in real life don't care about their reputation anyway, then what are you going to get? You know, I mean, because I expect to have some type of personal CSM that's responsible and that I can fairly, you know, trust, not an idiot.
When you choose to run for CSM and walk the knife edge, it's going to look a lot sharper now, that's for sure.
Well, and let's be honest, right? If Brisk did what he is accused of doing, then he deserves, what he gets, right? Like, you know, if you attempt to defraud a video game and you are in a position of public trust and that gets out, then guess what? You've just done something really silly. But, I think that being said, a lot of people, it's one of those things that, like, if you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to fear, which, I mean, in general, I don't like that expression. But in this case, what I'm saying is that just don't do stupid stuff while you're on the CSM, right? Don't break your NDA. There won't be a problem.
But what if he's innocent? Yeah. No, this is false allegation. I think that's the biggest part of everybody's mind, right?
Is well, Ash did say, if he's guilty, just, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, we don't know either way. But yeah, I'm what I'm saying is that, yes, people can come to their own conclusions, but I believe that a lot of people will simply conclude that they won't necessarily fall into that trap or whatever. Like, I would hate it if somebody was like, I want to do a great job for the CSM, but I think I'm going to get struck down by someone doing the right or, you know, that doesn't like me or something like that. And I don't know whether or not that's what happened here, but I think it's a scary narrative to fall into, especially given the fact that that hasn't happened before. Like, it's a pretty extreme idea that the CSM coordinated a takedown of of Brisk. Like, I don't think he was that hated among the CSM. I could be wrong.
Well, no. I hate to speculate, or I hate to hear some rumor mill here, but I have heard it from a few people now that they think they know who the two were, that it's been confirmed who the two were.
Well, either way, what my point is that I want to focus on what this looks like going forward, because there's been a lot of questions about whether or not the CSM should even, you know, be a thing, or what its existence should represent. And this has kind of been an existential crisis of the CSM since the beginning. So just a little bit of history. The CSM started in the wake of the T20 scandal, in which a GM or, you know, whatever, dev, spawned BPOs of T2s.
Tech 2 BPOs.
Yep. A couple of Tech 2 BPOs for Bomb and got caught doing it. And so this was a big, scandal, because the idea of CCP having their fingers on the scale was a very kind of dark accusation, especially in those days. And so not only did they, or as part of that, they formed the CSM as kind of a conduit between Eve and CCP. And since then, there's been basically kind of this evolving understanding of what the CSM is. The CSM has never been fully accepted by CCP. There's always been a lot of, you know, a big portion of CCP that does not trust the CSM. There's always been a push for the CSM to gain more trust and more inclusion. And in CCP's darkest hours, they have often relied on the CSM to function as kind of the intermediary for the community, in particular the War CSM and CSM-6, who helped negotiate the end of the Summer of Rage and Monocle Gate. So there's definitely been some key pivotal value to the CSM. But the problem is that our lack of understanding of the CSM and their powers have led in general to worse elections and confusion as to what our CSM are supposed to even be doing.
And sometimes the noise ratio gets lost because a lot of people don't understand what it is that they're doing. They just hear that there's a group of people that are getting free trips to Iceland twice a year.
Right. And then you hear something like this, you know, every couple of years there's some scandal involving the CSM. And then of course people ask themselves, is this really worth it? Is it worth giving some of the powers that be NDA access? Because the problem is that CSM, being an election, means that the most powerful institutions can basically insure their own members, which basically means that the powerful institutions can insure some kind of access to NDA information if they're able to, you know, work it out. Now, obviously, a lot of CSM members... most CSM members have been completely on the up and up. You know, I'm not accusing any CSM members of any untoward action or any organization of using the CSM in an untoward way, but those accusations have existed in the past, and those accusations have existed surrounding people that were removed from the CSM with little other explanation. I'll just put it that way. So, you know, it's a very complex issue, but I will say this. The fact that we have space politicians is still a valuable thing in Eve, even if they're just some side, you know, focus group. Effectively, it makes Eve deeper, right? The thing that makes Eve great is the fact that it's a role playing game that asks you to take on the role. You can be a military general, but guess what? You better be able to command people and have military strategy. You can be a CEO of a corporation with over 1,000 people, but you better be willing, be able to inspire them, give them directions, and solve their problems. You can be a space politician, but you know what? You better be able to get elected. And those are the things that make Eve different than every other video game. So I strongly recommend us figure out how to make the CSM work rather than, speak out, just say that it's worthless.
Well said.
A lot of times, too, when I hear people talking about, you know, got to get rid of the CSM because of this one CSM that screwed up this one time. And I'm like, if the CSM was perfect publicly, I would be way more concerned.
Precisely. Yeah, I honestly don't mind hearing a little bit of kerfuffle going on in the CSM. Obviously, CCP has to, you know, if they're presenting their non-disclosure agreement information to them and asking them their opinion, obviously you have to make sure that these people are able to respect the fact that they signed their name to a document that is supposed to be a non-disclosure agreement. But you know, honestly, we're all human and we all have different personalities. And I would be a little bit weird to get that Stepford vibe that everybody is kind of going, yes, we are all doing perfectly and, you know, no kerfuffles here.
I also want to say, because a lot of people have suggested that maybe it was accidental. He didn't realize what was being exposed and therefore maybe should not be punished. Unfortunately, that is not how NDAs work under any circumstances, and it is a serious deal. Like, you have way, way, way left the realm of, quote, it's just a video game, because you now have lawyers and contracts involved. You know, I have, in my last company, there was a guy who all he did was forget to tick the private repo of his stuff for a few hours. The client caught it and he was fired. They had to fire him because he had breached the NDA by accident, by exposing the code. It is an incredibly serious deal. And unfortunately, I believe that maybe sometimes we don't take it as seriously as we should, or at least, as, you know, the CSM doesn't.
Wow. That seems like a pretty harsh ramification for just a literal moment of oops.
Well, that moment of oops can cost a company their margin at the end of the year.
I get that.
And, you know, I can only imagine what kind of pressure was on CCP when they had an entire investment group they had to answer to. Now they have a South Korean corporation, which I'm sure will take no bullshit in the first, you know, opening they see to take complete control if the company's looking mismanaged. So CCP has to, you know, bring the hammer, or it doesn't look like they're being effective.
Right. The problem is that maybe it got used for in-game applications this time, but that's not the only information that the CSM is exposed to. So, you know, in this case, they don't look at it necessarily as a video game so much as a product. You are exposing trade secrets about their product, and that's the only way that they're going to look at it.
Yeah, but if you think about it, if you use that approach, that may be what's giving some of the CSM members some, you know, actual legitimacy. You know, all the people, all the naysayers who are saying that the CSM should go away is, you know, they're probably looking at it from the point of view that, oh, they're just, you know, it's just a game, blah, blah, blah. Now, if you turn around and kind of emphasize the fact that this is a product, this is a business's product, you know, maybe that might be kind of the first step to helping sway the legitimacy argument for some of these people who don't take it seriously.
Well, they have done that. That's why they fought for so long to become a stakeholder within the company. And they succeeded. Actually, like CSM 7 and 8 was really on an upswing. And then it's been kind of rocky.
Well, should we move into shout outs here? We're getting a bit long on the tooth.
That's kind of what I was just thinking.
And one more thing I wanted to add, but I just shoved a date in my mouth. Hold on.
I used one thing to my calendar.
That's okay. We can edit this out. You'll never know that there was a date that Ash just went on a date.
Anywho, okay. So I think that finally I want to talk about the fact that, you know, one of the other things that people talk about is restructuring the way that the CSM election is conducted. One of the problems is, as I mentioned earlier, the big organized groups are able to basically select their handful of people, and that leaves a lot of other groups not represented. And so what people have suggested is that people would have to announce who they're running for, like what group that they're running to represent, or what, like maybe two representatives from each band of space.
I'm the high sec cord, I'm the wormhole person, that
right
kind of thing.
So basically, yeah, instead of running one election, you run four: one for high sec, one for low sec, one for null sec, and one for wormhole space. You give each of those four two positions, and then you say, okay, well, you know, you're allowed to run for one of the, you know, you're only allowed to run for one. So you elect two people from each of those bands of space. And then maybe the top two people that, that scored all together that didn't get elected through that process also get in. Boom, you've got 10.
There's a lot of ideas. Like, I've also heard, like, you know, just having like alliance limits, like only a certain number of so many people from alliance can be involved in the CSM. There's a lot of ideas going on.
The problem with that, actually, now that I just thought about it, that's the problem with my idea too.
Yeah,
the problem with that is the fact that, you know, you don't necessarily have two people from goons, but it doesn't take, you don't have to be in the same alliance to be influenced by goons.
Yeah, I mean, alliance and stuff is so thin, like there's no way of verifying that somebody isn't. I mean, we've had that happen where immediately after the elections were announced, somebody turned to the other side.
True. Yeah, I went from wormholes to the goon side. So
yeah,
I don't know. Was that Bobman? Was it something like that?
One of the wormhole
candidates that ran specifically as a wormhole candidate. As soon as they got elected, they ended up getting propositioned and moved over to the goon swarm.
I think it was a re-election for him, wasn't it? I remember the guy. I remember who you're talking about, but I don't remember his name.
I'm not sure, but that's the other problem with my idea is that would allow like goon swarm to stuff their can. If it's four different elections, then that means that they could pick their fill off of each of them. So maybe you'd only be able to vote in a couple of them, too. Like, there's four elections, you're only allowed to vote in two. I don't know. There's some way to do it, man. But my point is that we need to, just like we have kind of deconstructed other, you know, truisms about Eve when it comes to the Alliance tournament and instances when it comes to the Abyss, I think that we really need to deconstruct what the CSM is and how we can find value out of it. You know, how can we elect people that can properly represent us so that CCP can communicate in a way that isn't dumb because we all struggle with this. Shout outs.
100%.
All right, Ash, you want to start us off with shout outs too?
My shout out is to Casey LP, who is a friend of mine from Fed Up, but in this case, he also is a fanatic of Dust 514. He came from here from 514, and he has been following Project Nova like a hawk. This week, PC Gamer published an article that said that despite Project Nova's cancellation, CCP is still trying or something like that, but they basically announced that Project Nova was canceled, which I tweeted about, and I said, this seems a bit premature to say this. And a lot of people took that to me being like showing people that announcement, and so there was a lot of like, oh, like people giving up. However, Casey brought to us from CCP Dopamine that it is not canceled. Project Nova is going forward as of right now.
Hell yeah.
Nice. Hendo?
Yeah, of course, shout out to FatBTV, my fellow streamers over there. Also, shout out to Zendane at the Evria podcast. I tried to shout him out the last time that it got deleted. And you know what? And shout out to Uriel. I just recently saw your new Triglavian lore. Very great.
The trigger scary.
Opus?
I'm going to shout out to Kanan, who is an FC in the Imperium, more specifically Goon Swarm. He's been leading some pretty awesome fleets, and I've been getting a lot of great PvP and EVE Online thanks to him. So shout out to him.
Nice and random.
I've got two shout outs this time around. My first shout out is to CCP for putting up a monument for Cadius Say, the capsuleer that we had talked about in a previous episode, who managed to go around and see every system in New Eden. Took him 9 years to do it and didn't lose a single ship. Well, they put up a monument for him, or for her, I should say. The characters are her. The character is in the monument is in Saisio. It's Saisio. I did fly to the system, and I'm assuming you have to actually scan it down because I couldn't just find it. But there's a lot of activity, a lot of pictures going on right now on Twitter, a lot of activity going on around the monument. So congratulations, CCP, for acknowledging, you know, the hard work that one of your players put in to see each and every system in the game. My second shout out is going to be to the think tank of ABA, and specifically for the Stream Fleet team, because I'm not going to mention any names just yet because I don't want anybody to be a specific target. But I will say that there was a lot of hard work put into trying to figure out what we're going to do for comps. And I know that there were a few people that put long hours in on PIFA trying to put these things together at the last minute because, you know, we were literally brought in at the last minute. So congratulations, guys, and lead us to victory.
Cool. And I just have two quick ones. Brisk, good luck figuring out what was going on and in your future endeavors. And also Commander Aves, I'm sorry to see he's not going to be running this year. One, because he'll have been the first person to run for six times, and two, because I know things were really lining up to look hopeful for him in terms of connections and things in game and the amount of support he had been getting. So it will be sad to not get to see what could have happened. But thank you all to our listeners for joining us for episode 95 of High Drag, and we're looking forward to doing another episode for you in the future.
Bonus fact, Saisio is the station is the system that she started her journey in. They put the monument on the very first Stargate that she used when she joins EVE Online.
That's cool, awesome. Cool.
All right, we'll see you in space.
Good job.
Fun stuff.
Woohoo.
Oh, the whiskey is floating, won't stay in me glass. I'm weightless and spinning and drunk off me ass. Oh, the whiskey is floating in a spear or me head. If we don't clear this wormhole, we'll surely be dead. So reach for the whiskey, boys, reach for the stars. They won't stop us drinking on Venus or Mars. So reach for the whiskey, boys, reach for the sky. For the vacuum of space sucks the bottles all dry. Oh, infinite. awaits us in space. We'll pillage and plunder with fervor and grace. That's what my astronomical unit is for. Let's party where no one has partied before. So reach for the whiskey, boys. Reach for the stars. They won't stop us drinking on Venus or Mars. So reach for the whiskey, boys. Reach for the sky. For the vacuum of space sucks the bottles all dry.
Alone in the cockpit, I gaze at the stars. I drink and I think of my home.
He thinks of his home
of my own.
Our thrusters are the hottest that you've ever felt. They might just unbuckle your asteroid belt. We're honing our moonwalking skills as we speak. We'll dance on Uranus by this time next week. So reach for the whiskey, boys. Reach for the stars. They won't stop us drinking on Venus or Mars. So reach for the whiskey, boys. Reach for the sky. For the vacuum of space sucks the bottles all dry. Your turn. So reach for the whiskey, boys. Reach for the stars. They won't stop us drinking on Venus or Mars. So reach for the whiskey, boys. Reach for the sky. Space sucks the bottles all dry.
Thank you.